Previously on Steambox Versus, Bruce Leroy, the last dragon, shared the glow. The Iron Sheik broke backs and made us humble. Michio Kaku showed us how to find dark matter. Samus and Megarad led a rap battle for the ages, and we plunged into virtual reality in Ready Player One. Will Steambox make it back to Ghibli in Japan? Will the Boston Celtics dunk on us? Will the Dragon Ball Z narrator ever join the crew? Stay tuned and find out on Steambox Versus.
Hey, this is Roberto. You're back with another Steambox podcast. Today I'm with the Warriors from Central Falls. Warriors, please say what's up to the world.
What's up?
We have a guest in the house. We've got Sokio Ross. He is director of one of the buildings at, is it Providence College?
Yep, Moore Hall.
Moore Hall at Providence College. I don't know what that means. What does that mean to be a director at Moore Hall?
It means I literally direct this space and see what goes on and out operationally and so on and so forth. But since my directorial debut there, it has become very student managed. Yep. So student run, and they have a saying called "By students for students."
Okay.
So they run the space.
That's how Steambox works. Steambox is like a lot of, it's student led, it's student developed.
Nice.
I run things based on their idea. That's why we got this arcade cabinet here. They made it.
Dope.
It's wild. That thing plays like 2000. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, and I also know that we are pretty much politically aligned because you and I were both in the same documentary. Dr. Luis Munoz, yep, who was running for governor.
Yeah.
How did you get on board with Luis Munoz?
So that was, he hit me up. He messaged me on Facebook. He went through all of my social media and so on and so forth and heard a few things about me, and he wanted to get some support. So we had lunch. We went to lunch, and then that was pretty much it. A lot of our things aligned with each other, and him being from Central Falls and me loving Central Falls and teaching it for a number of years. I fell in love with the space, I mean the location, and then it went on from there. And then when it got to his actual, you know, his speaking engagements, I wanted him to know for sure that if he is for the people, and if he do the people wrong, people are gonna go for him.
Yeah.
So
I know we're down with social justice. We were in the same video talking about a lot of similar issues. And you're at Providence College, where I've seen so many race problems,
mm-hmm,
just when I used to live around there and just from what I know about the place. Is that something that you've seen, that you thought about and considered when you took the position? And is it something that you think you can help with? I know you've already alluded to you are helping with that.
Yeah.
But
I've heard the stories about PC prior to even stepping foot on PC, even before going my master's. PC wasn't even on my list of universities and colleges when I was going for my master's.
Yeah.
Then, of course, my liaison was like, yo, what about Providence College? I was like, nah, I'm good. And then he goes, you know what, just check into the curriculum of this program, Master of Education and Urban Teaching. I'm like, all right, let me just take a quick look. It's like 8:30, 9 o'clock at night in his office. I looked into it. Out of all the four to five universities at the time, PC was the only one that had all of the classes I wanted to take. So I jumped on it. He sent an email out immediately, 7 in the morning. My liaison hits me back up, Adam Bush from College Unbound. He was like, yo, did you check your email? I'm like, fam, it's 7 in the morning. I didn't even have my coffee yet.
Right.
He goes, nah, check, they want you. I'm like, cool. So they set up a meeting immediately, and I was meeting with Nuria, who is director of the Masters of Education program there that I was taking. I got an early acceptance, and she was like, okay, you're in. But she knew of my work in the community and my performances for years.
Yeah.
So she was like, yo, we're honored to have you. I'm like, I got you. Now fill out the application. So as I was doing that, I was still seeing, hearing systemic issues and so on and so forth. But my main goal was to get my master's. But unfortunately, I still had to hustle as an artist. Not unfortunately, because that was the dope part for me.
Yeah.
Right? So I had to do 15 to 20 hours a week at the place that I'm now the director of.
Yeah.
And that was the only space on campus that I felt comfortable at the time.
Okay.
At the time, as someone coming in, a person of color and from a marginalized community. But also, the director was super dope, Sean Mukhtar. She took me in, and I met her in 2018 prior to even doing my master's.
Right.
At College Unbound.
Okay.
And I'm like, all right, cool. So long story short, I banged it out in a year and a half. It's a 2-year program. Went full time. I taught, did workshop shows everywhere during my master's and at PC. And then became manager, then director. The thing for me is, because I know of the systemic issues and so on and so forth that are plaguing said communities, my main focus to try to bridge that gap between PC and the external community, because I also am supervisor of the PC Smith Hill Annex, mm-hmm. which is for the community and also for students to utilize okay. for free. If you ever need a space, let me know. But one of my biggest goals besides that one was to make sure now as director that the students, all of the students on PC, especially BIPOC and historically marginalized, gets a chance to voice what they want to voice.
Okay.
And then take control of whatever programs and initiatives that go on in Moore Hall.
Yeah.
And in my position, I want to make sure that those dreams, initiatives, and programs come to fruition as best as they can be.
Right.
You know, and you know, if you know, you don't know about PC, it's how I learned how Dominicans became Dominicans, like Dominican Republic, because my daughter is half Dominican, and also, it's a predominantly white institution. That's not a lie. That's fact. It's a religious institution, Catholicism and Dominican Friar more specifically. So all of that is not who I am. Meaning to say that I am still there for what, right? If that's not who you are authentically, why are you there? It's because of the people that gave me the opportunities to do so. And I see a lot of students of color and marginalized students and students who are willing to learn and engage in said conversation and stuff, who want to move forward. So progress slowly, yes.
We might be, some of the questions might be personal, because I know I just want to make sure, please let us know if you're uncomfortable and you'd rather just switch it up for another question. We'd be happy to do that.
I'll just say I can't answer that. I'll plead the fifth.
Yeah.
Okay. Fifth. Right. I'm fair game, though. All
right.
Mostly.
Yeah, because I think we can learn from so much of it. You know what I mean? I feel like so much of that is important. So I'm gonna start with Adam. Adam, what's your question for Soak?
So I heard you're a dancer, right?
I am.
How did you get into dancing?
What is this?
Earlier he said that his question was going to be if you could dance for us. And I was like, yo, this is a podcast. So we'll hear it.
I said it was a joke, really. It's because I know, but I might be wrong. There's a musical called Heathers, and he's going to be like, oh, did you do something like that?
He does have a history of this. Now find a way to tie it to Heathers, but go ahead.
See, now you got to do it.
Now no, don't do it. Go ahead.
I'd rather not right now.
Go ahead.
How'd you get into dancing?
For those of you who don't know, I'm from the West End. Well, now, I'm a refugee. When I came here, I got displaced in the West End in Hanover Street. So it was a gang neighborhood, and that's all I knew. And Bridger Middle School, same thing, ACMS, the same thing. If you weren't in a gang, you had friends who were in the gangs. But since my house, 3-family, first floor were gang members, there's no way around it. So I didn't do anything that was anti-gang affiliated, so on and so forth. Those were the people who looked out for me. They were fam to me. They became part of the culture and what I looked for. So when I went to classical high school, which is college prep school, don't know how I got in, still don't. right?
Yeah.
The thing was, I was uncomfortable being there because it was a culture shock for me.
Same.
Right? So I reverted back to hanging out with folks that I'm used to. Not to say anything negative about them, because they were phenomenal people and still are. The thing for me was I needed that outlet. Breaking was a hobby. Because the B-boys and the B-girls and B-people that were doing that were gang members. So I started doing it as a hobby with them. And I started to really enjoy it. And we were just literally copying, like, or trying to mimic videos, Beat Street and so on and so forth. So I'm more so self-taught. And the other thing was, I went to this place called the Carriage House. If you don't know about the Carriage House, Everett Company Stage and School at the age of 16. I went to like one open break dance class, and I fell in love with the space because there's a whole bunch of people physically, their body language was super creative because they were speaking the same language that I'm used to, because I was really shy. But dancing, I could move, right? And that was it. I was leaving that one day, and the director, Dorothy Jungles, comes up to me and she goes, yo, you want to do it? She didn't say yo, obviously. But she, white lady, tall white lady, phenomenal peoples, asked me to do this, what's it called? Healthy Habits. It's an anti-tobacco educational school show. And because of my fear of my parents, I said, nah, didn't want to do it. And she goes, and when you had that thing about going to Japan and your parents said no, I was like, oh man, memories, trauma came back to me, right? Then she goes, well, you get like food, pizza, or McDonald's, and then like after each show, and you get $20 or $25 after each show. And I'm like, nah, I'm good, because I was still like, you know, I don't want to. Fearful. And then she was saying, well, or hinting at, well, most of the shows are during school. So I was like, cool, sign me up. So that means I get to skip school. But the thing was, back to your question, and to you, what you said earlier in the other podcast, I was so afraid of my parents that I didn't even ask them. I forged all my papers, not to tell you, but I forged all my papers, because in fourth grade, there's a thing called Chance to Dance, and man, I was auditioning. I was going hard as hell. I was going hard, and then when I finally got picked, I was souped, and then the lady choreographer was like, oh, cool, awesome, here's the permission slip. And I was reading through the permission slip, and it said that the performance was going to be in Boston. You know, it's like, what, 45 minutes away? I didn't know the time. But again, I was so afraid of asking my parents that I didn't even bother asking them. So I never went to Boston after I made it. So back to your question again, I was like, you know what, I'm going to just forge my own papers. And breakdancing, hip-hop, the arts, literally the thing that saved my life. If not, I'd be dead or in jail. And now it flourished into a career and had created multiple pathways so I could look at my academics, my creative side, and my success story in so many different realms.
People don't know that. People don't know that you can take the things that you love and that can be a career. People think that you've got to be the standard, like, filler jobs. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like a lot of factory jobs or...
Which I did, factory jobs.
You know, or if you get the education for it, the jobs that you need to be educationally qualified mm-hmm. for, doctor, nurse, all that stuff, lawyer. People don't know that. You mentioned College Unbound. Mm-hmm. People didn't know. So I went from classical. Where am I gonna go from here? And I had to go around a bit because I was a bad student. So I had to, like, by the time I was out of classical, CCRI, I was lucky that CCRI would take me. But I worked my way up to my dream school and I made it to Emerson. But then it was at that point when I was looking at another school around Boston, and I was like, hold up, this school, you can work in the studio? Like, I can produce music in, like, that can be my whole class is just working in the studio. Can you tell people about College Unbound? Because that's right here in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, you can get a degree based on doing the things that you're already doing and the things that you love.
Absolutely. So I didn't graduate high school. Glasgow High School. I was horrible. The only thing that kept me going was dance. By senior year, in almost every single class, I borrowed a pencil and a piece of paper. Long story short, one of my teachers was like, my grade point average, my GPA was a 38. And back then you can get an E, gang signs. Back then you can get an E. So he was like, let me do you a favor. I'm gonna give you 20 points, that gives you a 58. Now here's your choices. He said, drop out and get your GED, or you can redo the whole senior year and try to do better, or accept this E because now it allows me to take summer classes. I had to take two summer courses or something like that. So, again, because my parents, I was afraid of them, I took the route of, like, let me do these summer courses. I banged them out, aced it. And then I got my diploma, like, what? By September, end of August.
Yeah, we have that in common too. Yeah. I graduated over the summer.
Yeah.
I was a bad student. Lewis, what's your... But also,
sorry, I'm going back to College Unbound. I just went over the whole thing.
Classical didn't make it easy either.
Nah, it was so different for me. It wasn't it. So College Unbound came in after the fact, like 2013. So I went to CCRI, did 2 years, failed out. And I dropped out of school completely and continued touring nationally. Fell in love with the community and the work that I was doing already. 2007, I'm a little bit older. I'm like, cool, let me go to college. I went back to Rhode Island College, which is the college that I got kicked out of when I was a senior because I didn't graduate high school. Did another 2 years, failed out. Changed my major 3 times. Didn't understand my traumas and all of the emotional things that I was going through, because growing up in my community and whatever is like, grow up, man up, We went through genocide, gang neighborhood ain't nothing, but not understanding how the traumas affect us daily. So I was like, I get bumped that. So I was like, you know what? Continue being an artist. Again, loved it. Loved it. Traveling everywhere. TED Talks, NYU, Yale University, all of these amazing elitist type places, Brown University, yada, 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 without a degree. Then College Unbound came, was like, yo, you want to get your degree? I'm like, cool. I heard a few things, signed up. Year and a half, banged it out. I had a dirty attitude, though, because I was like, give me my degree. I already deserve this joint. I felt like I knew everything.
At College Unbound?
At College Unbound. Okay. I felt like I knew everything. But I finally earned my degree, right? I worked for it. The dope part about College Unbound is that they meet you where you're at. How many credits you got? This amount? Cool. Let's see what we can do moving forward. I can write portfolios or lips, whatever they call them, that you can get your classes and get submit these portfolios and get credit as class courses. Now, they run by a big picture learning pedagogy, which is a international way of looking at education. And it's super dope because they're meeting all the students where they're at. In every single school that they develop, we want to make sure that we have the resources and accesses for you, you, and you to graduate the way you want to graduate. Not the way everybody else graduates, but the way you want to graduate. So going back to your point of asking about College Unbound, you can get a degree. It's one degree. It's more so right now organizational leadership, but that goes into multitudes of different places. But you, the work that you're doing is catered to what you want to do in life. And the majority of them are adult learners anyway.
Did anybody else hear him just gloss over genocide? Like it was like, he was like, oh, you know, I got to pass by the neighborhood bullied, there's gangs, there's genocide. Like, that's a big word that's really hard for people to process because one, it's hard to comprehend a whole nationality of mm-hmm. people or a whole group of people, a whole identity of people being exterminated, right? And then I heard, this was a couple of months ago, we're starting to erase, you know, the very few that we even talk about, right? The one of the ones that we talk about is when white people were being exterminated. I'm not trying to take away from that. I promise I'm not trying to be insensitive to it because it's horrible, right? But what I'm saying is it's odd to me that that's the only one that we recognize. But then even then, you know, we got basketball players and supposed genius rappers who I used to bump their songs. Denying that even that kind of genocide occurred. Mm-hmm. But at least we know about that genocide. At least some of us know about that genocide. You talked about a genocide that I wonder how many of these people knew. How many of our listeners even know? And he does not mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you don't mean genocide by way of the gangs on the West Side and Messer Street, mm-hmm. Which I'm familiar with because that's where my grandma's from. Mm. But you're talking about an entirely different genocide. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, I'll speak on it briefly. The Cambodian genocide in Silk Mai in Cambodia, approximately 2 million people were slaughtered. Pol Pot was the dictator. That's not even his real name. I forgot what his real name was. He grew up with like 6 to 8 brothers and sisters, normal, quote-unquote, normal kind of like childhood, Cambodian childhood. He studied communism in Paris, I think, or France. France and then also in China, learned about all these things. And when time came to it, he developed a whole army in Cambodia that supports his vision to being a more agrarian. Is that the word?
I don't know the word agrarian. Bringing it I'm back not cultured to, enough, man. Classical didn't do me right.
Listen, me neither. That was history. I failed. So it brought him, he was trying to bring it back to the original culture. But in doing so, he got rid of love, culture, family structure, education, arts, creativity. Everyone was in one basic uniform. You were either in his army or part of the people that were going to be in his army. He recruited a lot of children. A lot of the children had to kill their own family members, their parents specifically. The genocide happened with even saying, hey, you know what, we're going to bring you all you people, and they were all enslaved, bring you to a new field, and then they were being executed. And these are, and please stop me if this is too much, there are stories in terms of like, there's something called a killing tree, where they would smash babies against a tree. If you were born deformed, they would kill you immediately. If you had glasses, they would kill you. If you spoke more than one language, they would kill you. The Khmer language, if you spoke more than that, they would kill you. My father, so I lost a lot of family members. I had 6 brothers and sisters that either died from starvation, lack of medication, you know, lack of food, disease, and so on and so forth. Lost a lot of aunts and uncles. And also, my father was, since he was in the Cambodian army, they were looking out for him. But when they found him, he took his clothes off and he had some like pedestrian type clothes. And when the Khmer Rouge found him, he was like, I'm a fisherman. So they kept him because they need food, right? So
your father was a rebel?
He was in the Cambodian army. Not the rebel, in the rebellion stage, but actually the national army.
Yeah.
For that, right? So, but the rebellious and fighting against right. the Khmer Rouge, yeah. right? So the only way that was even, was it coming to some kind of like end in a sense, 1975 to 1979?
Hold up. What you're saying sounds like the Jesus times.
Mm.
It sounds like times where civilization hasn't really taken a hold of, like, you're talking about their parents' lifetime.
Yeah.
And I hate to admit it, but my actual lifetime, like, I was a baby when this occurred.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about during my lifetime, during their parents' time.
Yeah.
This was happening.
75. 1975, the 1900s, if you didn't know.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And, yeah, so the only way it was coming to, like, an end, quote-unquote, even though it happened for a couple of years, was because of the Vietnam War. They came in, but the Vietnam War was supported by the United States. Not the Vietnam War itself, but more so the Khmer Rouge was supported by the United States because they were going against Vietnam and so on and so forth.
I know I've got to be getting to your questions.
Yes, right?
I'm sorry though, hold on. Let me take one more just while we're on the subject. A lot of things got raided. A lot of national treasures got sold off,
mm-hmm.
And it wasn't going back to Cambodians. So now, treasure hunters and other people are finding these artifacts and they're selling them for high value or putting them in museums instead of giving them back. You all remember in Black Panther when Killmonger, you know what I mean, goes and he's like, right. he liberates the vibranium back. Some of the people who famously did that, and correct me if I'm wrong, or even if we know about this stuff, but some of the people who famously did that are Lindemans, right? This group, this family called the Lindemans. And now Brown, I think...
Just heard about it.
So yeah, Brown University, right here in Rhode Island, in Providence. Brown University, who everybody loves and adores, who acts high and mighty about a lot of things... they're actually naming one of their centers after the Lindemans, after people who have raided, ransacked, and stolen a lot of these national artifacts and treasures. Mm-hmm. Is it too early to have thoughts on that? I mean, it's breaking news kind of thing. It's like a just now.
It's not too early. I just heard about it today, and so I don't know the full detail and the stories of it yet, but so far... it's regarding to what you're saying exactly. But I need to look into it before you can actually speak on it because I don't know much yet. But that's what I'm hearing too.
I also feel like, and we get into a mental wellness podcast in May, which has been the treasure of my time at Steambox. Not the sending stuff to space, not the Japan trips, but just talking about our feelings. I also know that I'm way too obnoxious and immature to have those conversations with these students. So I usually bring in somebody qualified. I am not qualified. But... I'm not qualified to even engage further or process a lot of the stuff that you just said, but I think there's so many things, right? Like there's all the national treasures, there's people killing their own people. You've lost family members to this tragedy. There's so many more directions I want to go in, and I feel like all of my questions are like wildly inappropriate or insensitive or... But man, I just hope that our audience can learn more about that. Lewis, what's your question for Soap?
Oh, that's cool. I wanted to continue on what he was saying about like his parents and stuff. For me, when the Japan thing, my parents before they said they were most likely going to say no.
Mm.
But I thought if I got in and I got accepted or whatever, they'd probably change their mind. But then they didn't. So that's how I relate to like you didn't want to tell your parents either.
Yeah.
So I didn't tell my parents I was going to sign up for it.
Yep. And you got accepted and everything. Yeah. Did they feel any kind of way at all towards that? You getting accepted? Because it's a huge accomplishment. Oh,
yeah. For my mom, she was like, that's good, but like, she's very caring. So like, she'd rather take care of me and be there if like anything happens. So she said no. And so is my dad.
Okay. And may I ask your culture?
I'm Mexican.
Mexican. So, and you know, they're coming more of traditional based family culture, which you and I are not used to, or maybe used to, but also we want to make sure that we have these accesses and resources when we're getting them, that we're taking advantage of them. So the reason I didn't tell my parents was because I was afraid of them. And for me, it was easier because it was local. So I did it anyway. I think for you, it is more so the anxiety.
Yeah.
The worrisome part of it. And I know from their own, I don't know your parents, but I know from their own traumas that they don't want to see anything happen to you. So it does coming from a love and affection and caring kind of regard. I would still push forward with trying to get them, sway them in any way you can to go to Japan, because it's a one-time, lifetime opportunity.
Next time we go, man, you got to present your case. Yeah.
I would fight for it. If you need any help in any way in language, not Spanish language, but more so swaying them. If there's like, oh, we have staff that is trained to do this. Oh, we have someone that's going to be doing this. This is the itinerary and so on and so forth. So from a performative aspect, you're presenting them something with that looks really, really nice, although it is anyway. But they have to see it from that kind of lens because they're not going to say yes.
Yeah.
Because they're going to see you as, did you say you were only child?
No.
Who's only child? Somebody's only child. I'm lying. Go ahead.
I'm the oldest.
The oldest, right. And then there's a lot of responsibilities. Now, is it also, my question now, since you're the oldest, there's a lot of responsibility that fall on you as being the oldest in terms of, because I had to grow up when I was in like middle school.
Yeah. For me.
Like adult growing up.
Like adult growing up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, if I do something, I know it's going to rub off on my brothers, so I have to be, like, present to be good.
I stopped street racing in Providence when I saw my brother start getting the idea of street racing in Providence. I was like, oh, hold up.
But this is a dope thing. Yeah, street racing is dope, too, but, you know, it's another thing. I think this is a dope thing because how many people get a chance to go to Japan? And how old are you?
I'm 15.
15! Go to Japan, right? And are you a freshman?
Sophomore
in, I'm saying this because we're right here.
Yeah.
I would look into a lot of the other adults who are going and having them present something or at least write something down to have your parents feel less worried, because that anxiety is not going to go away. It's not, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But you have to sway them any way you can, because this is going to be a good look on your younger siblings too. Because, man, he's going to Japan doing this.
I'm hearing Soak connect with you on parents' motivations.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing him connect, and he actually alleviated and excused the parents and said, well, they're probably trauma-informed, you know, to hold back on something like that and to grip you so tightly. And I think that, is that because that's something that you could relate to? When you're afraid of your parents, is that something like, physically, you're afraid of your parents at that age in high school. And is it because of their tragic experiences that they were parenting different and maybe harder?
Yeah, I was the oldest, so I got beat a lot.
Yeah,
I got yelled at a lot, so I was afraid to do anything. I didn't want to get yelled at again, right? So I became rebellious in high school. I was still shy, but super rebellious in high school. And not to tell you to be rebellious, but I'm always for the student, always for the youth, and your voice and your power and who you are, and I think you're going to create dope things in Japan. And I don't even know what the hell the Japan trip is even about, but that's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And again, I would push for any adult advocates to go present something or documentation, whatever the hell it is, to get you to go, because it's a tough thing for me, and I'm passionate about this because fourth grade, I was like, nah, I could have been a star, fam. I could have been out there. And then, but...
Well, I did see you in a movie that was produced by Alyssa Milano. Oh. you know what I mean? So I did. So you are a star.
In a sense. So my thing is, if there's any way you can sway them, you know, because they need to be motivated, because they're not.
Yeah.
all they see is fear right now. Fear for you. And again, to Beyond Podcast, if you ever need anything from me, let me know. Or if you just want to talk and chit-chat, because I definitely understand what you're going through. And then the asking the question about dance, how did I get into it? That was one of the reasons. That was my only outlet.
That's how I feel with, like, either sports and, like, after school programs. Like, I get to relieve stress.
Yeah, absolutely. And go for it. So,
we're happy to have you here. This guy started a side hustle podcast. And I was scared at first, and probably anybody else, I'd be scared. Yeah. He started this Steambox podcast, Steambox Versus. He started a podcast called Steambox After Dark.
After dark, I'm like, uh-oh,
what's he doing? What's he doing? Oh, man, if it's grimy content, people are going to associate it with Steambox. I'm actually proud to be affiliated with what's going on. I actually want to support it. Keith, what is your question for Silk? What? We've had all this time.
It's because of the fact of, like, Alright, so what got me was, you know what, this could be my question.
Is it the chicken nuggets thing?
No, because you said that when I went like this all the time, it was like an emotional thing or something like that, like a psychology thing.
Yeah.
That scared me.
Yeah,
because I was like, okay, wait a minute, now I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And I'm like, listen to this guy, I'm relating a lot to what he's like.
He saw you.
Yeah.
So the thing is, sorry, and that was my fault to call you out on that.
No, it's not a big deal.
But it's a natural thing that we don't even understand. The more we understand it, the better we can continue to do that. Because now people are just going to see it as, yo, this dude's emotional as shit. But nah,
it's just...
It's normal. Well, okay. So don't be afraid of that.
I guess my question is...
Okay.
When did you learn... Where did you learn to do it? And how did you learn to do it? Like, the psychology
stuff. So that stuff came a little bit more organically with me because of the arts. And because of dance. I was able to... I didn't know back then, but I was able to translate what I wanted to say physically. And I know, you know, in dance and anything physical, it creates endorphins and all these, they call them happy chemicals and so on and so forth. So it makes you feel better, right? Like going to sports and so on and so forth. But I didn't know that. But I knew I felt good after doing it. So the work that I've been doing was always with communities and they've made me feel better. And, you know, vice versa, right? So I got more in tune with, like, trying to understand why am I so angry as a child? Why am I so emotional as a child, or why was I so shy, or why was I so a bit introverted in certain things? I wanted to learn more about that. So when the opportunity came for me to tour with them nationally, I was like 18 years old, 19 years old, and I was like, cool, let me go on tour. But these shows were all social justice bound, like labor union work, racism, KKK stuff, the brain, the body, how your brain works. So I had a chance to learn all of that. And as I'm learning, I'm being triggered all the time because, like you said, I think, oh shit, that's me. Yep, I can relate to it. But my kind of like triggering was more so aggressive, yelling, screaming, breaking walls, certain things like that. And I had to find a way to channel that energy. Again, the arts was the only thing that kept me going and kept me moving forward, and that was the only thing that kept me focused. So I was able to channel that energy in that way and learn about myself through the stuff that I love to do with community. And that made the healing, although a lot of times painful, that much better and worth it. Until this day, I teach trauma-informed education on a graduate level and a college level. And I've done shows and programs throughout, like, all over New England and nationally. So that's why I fell in love with it. And it's because of your story, that allowed me to still relate at the age of 42 to what you're going through right now. Because although we have, like, so I believe in that your story is yours. It's your story, you tell it, nobody else. And your story is significantly made for you because you're creating it. Do you share similarities and experiences with others? Absolutely. But you will have what Keith has. You will have what you have, you will have what you have, you will have what you have. You know what I mean? So I hope I answered your question, but that's what allowed me to move forward with learning about
one thing.
Yeah.
One thing we was like talking about when you said that, like, he was like the older one, older brother, stuff like that. See, I have a younger sister, but like the problem I have is that my mom prioritizes my sister more than me. And I see that, my mom sees that, but my sister takes it as she doesn't get, like, my sister thinks that she gets no love from my mom. Like, it's a spoiled type of thing. Mm-hmm. And there's a thing where, like, my sister had a problem, so she went to Bradley Hospital. Mm-hmm. And it was a bad thing. And so I at that young age, I was, like, kind of mad about it. Because I was, like...
That she went to Bradley.
Yeah, but, like, the reason for it was like, my mom gave her all the attention, stuff like that, and stuff like that, and she went to Bradley Hospital, and then, like, I was like, oh, she has to be doing this for attention. Mm. And I was, like, mad about it. And then part of it was, like, she was kind of doing it for attention. It was, like, an attention type of thing. But also, it was, like, I think she did need help. Mm-hmm. But it didn't help that well, because Bradley Hospital, it pampered her. So it made it seem like... Because the way I learned was I got my butt whooped. Right. So if I got whooped, then I did something wrong, then I wouldn't do it again. But now, if my mom tries with my sister, it's a thing of, like, oh, I'm calling the cops and stuff like that. That's what my sister says. So it's, like, my mom can't do much. Instead, like, she just gives my sister whatever she wants. And it, like, sucks because I feel bad. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, damn. And then my mom feels bad because she feels like she's giving so much attention to my sister instead of me. And I'm, like, it is what it is. It's not her fault.
You know, So thank you, and I appreciate you sharing this story with me because you didn't have to. Being reciprocal, I ended up at Butler Hospital, right, for said things I was telling you about earlier. So the thing is, too, the attention-seeking, absolutely, but that's a result of trauma. And one of the things that we're looking at as we're discussing this is you being the oldest one, you have, quote-unquote, more responsibilities and so forth. What happens with your parents or your mom now is that she's like, okay, he's good. Let me focus on the younger sibling and not make the same mistakes I did with the older sibling. If you know grandparents, right? Like my grandparents aren't alive. So my parents specifically, as you know about the story I told about myself, being afraid of them, the way they are to my daughter and my nephew and my niece, completely different.
Yeah, man.
You know how it is when you're like, oh, back then you were like, oh, there's no McDonald's money. All of a sudden they got McDonald's money. And all that love and affection is now there. And I'm like, what the fuck was this when I was younger?
Yeah.
So, and that made me upset. But also, because I know this now, I'm not going to fault them for that. Because they went through genocide. And they went through a whole lot of stuff that they didn't understand or still don't understand. So your mom is not understanding what it is that's going on. And your little sister, she can see that. Right? And there is the freedom because she is being, quote unquote, more spoiled by your mom now, as you're seeing it in that regard, which is probably true. But from your mom's standpoint, she's probably like, man, I don't know what to do now, even if she makes a mistake. And now she's want to revert back to, like, disciplining her the way she did you. Now the little sister's like, nah, I'm going to call the cops because she knows she has that, right? It's hard to translate or try to transfer energies from you to her. And I don't think your mom understands that. And right now, the quote-unquote disciplining is completely different. So it's two extremities. And you're in high school, right?
Yeah.
She sees you like you made it, quote-unquote. Not fully yet, but, you know, you're there. Now she's trying to get this one to go. But it's tough because there's that attention-seeking coming from the trauma. There's also all of these things where she's retaliating against, I would say, and I'm all for therapy. I'm all for therapy. I never was, because it was the white thing to do. Yeah, growing up for us, I don't know if you heard before, but we're not white.
Yeah.
Grow up. I don't know the thing for you. Yeah, stuff
just
like
suck
that.
It up. You're a man.
Right. Those kinds of problematic statements, but it was the white thing to do because we couldn't afford it. But also, we never grew up that way. So I think for me is there has to be someone else that can help mediate. Bradley, I've heard of issues with them also, and Butler, and a lot of other these institutional places that are not culturally responsive to the needs of people that go in there, no matter how it is, right? And that's with education too. That's a whole nother story. I don't know if I helped you out at all, but I hope you had a better understanding for your mom, for yourself, and for your little sister. So you can maybe navigate it a different way, if so. I don't know if I help or not.
I feel like I relate to, like, the older part, because with me when I was younger, like, my parents weren't there for a lot of stuff that I did, or events or achievements.
Mm-hmm.
So now they take a lot of responsibility into trying to be there for my brothers.
Yeah.
Since they couldn't be there for me when I was younger.
Yeah, there is that too. There is that too.
So you said your family brought you here?
No, we were sponsored here. United States?
Yeah.
We were sponsored. So once we, because I was born in a refugee camp. So once they made it to the Thailand border, it was a 3-day walk.
So not in Cambodia, you were born in?
Thailand.
Okay, so you're born in Thailand.
Camp. Yeah, so.
What was the place like that you're born? Was it a hospital?
No, it was a refugee camp.
Okay.
So the first hospital was a.
I heard you say refugee camp, but I still like. Yeah. Is it like a medical?
No, tents. Like stuff you would see in movies right now in like internment camp, not internment camps, but like stuff you see in internationally, right? So, it's still like, prevalent today.
Like an actual tent.
Tent, yeah, tents, tarps.
Yep.
Fires to keep warm and stuff like that.
That's how your life started.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now you're leading, you're one of the leading contributors at Providence College with Moore Hall.
Moore Hall.
Yep. With Moore Hall. So you've gone from being born in a tent.
Yeah. Man. Well, no, born. So sorry. You asked about the hospital.
Yeah.
It wasn't a hospital. It was a makeshift hospital. It was, you know, those big tractor trailers, those big 16-wheelers.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first hospital. That's where I was born.
You were born in a truck.
Yep.
This makes me like, I think about some horrible moments from my childhood. And then the dude who's sitting next to me and his perseverance after being born in a truck and going through the gang stuff, family having survived the genocide, man, it's really hard for me to be like, damn, I had it bad. You know what I mean?
I mean, but you did. Everybody had it. That's one thing I want to get across is that your story is yours. Did you get it bad? Hell yeah. We're not in the oppression Olympics. We're not in the trauma Olympics. We're not here to say I had it worse than you did.
Yeah.
You had it worse than I did. It's more so we did have it bad.
Yeah.
Really bad. But if I were to go with you and we're debating about who had it worse, that's stupid as fuck. Sorry to say. I would never do that. I would never go to you and try to minimize your story and your struggles. That's just... Completely beyond, for me, humankind. Anyways.
I hear you.
I can rant.
I hear you. But I feel like there's a level of competition. Not competition, but...
No, there is. I just don't do it.
Even measuring, right? Like, so I'd be like, all right, this dude was born in a truck in another country.
Well, measuring's different, yes.
And look at where this dude is now. And it really makes me say, all right, what do I... And I hope our listeners, too. I hope the people who are listening... This podcast is number 2 in the world.
Ooh, I'm happy to be here, y'all.
So we appreciate you. But I'm hoping that some of our listeners, which, again, we say every day, Ireland, why is Ireland so hot? Because that's one of our... It's weird. I don't even know why.
Honestly,
I have no idea why.
Nice. Go Ireland.
But don't offend the Irish people, Adam. But the idea of... If Soak was born into what he was born into with his family coming from a genocide, and he's made it this far, right? Like why can't we? Right? He mentioned briefly, and it was probably parenthetical, but he mentioned briefly like mental struggles, mm-hmm. right? And if he can deal with like physically and mentally and like financially. All of the struggles that I've heard in this podcast, like, damn, what's my excuse for not being able to reach my goals and achieve my goals? I appreciate that. I appreciate you. I appreciate you sharing that message. Go ahead. Yeah.
Couple things. Because you said that.
Yep.
So I don't promote if I can do it, you can do it.
Right.
I promote more so I can do it. You want to get there? Let me help you how to get there.
Yeah.
Right? Because there are so many different stories where... They use that against children, against the youth, against people.
I agree.
Whereas like, oh, Keith made it. Why can't you make it? If he make it, you can make it. But that's the thing. They don't know what your story is. They don't know what your story is. You have struggles, but whatever happened to Keith that helped him go through. Am I saying your name right, Keith, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because you're laughing. I don't know. I want to make sure that.
No, it's the thing.
Okay.
Because you sound like, that's something my grandmother would say.
Ah, yes. Gotcha. Damn, I'm that old?
No, sorry.
This is an important point.
Yeah. I want to make sure that we don't promote this false level of resilience. They call it resilience, but we didn't have a choice.
Yep.
I didn't choose to be poor. I didn't grow up to be, hey, you know what? refugee camp. Let me be born in that shit. No, it's more so in if I did make it, and I'm saying I did make it out of whatever struggles I was trying, and I'm still struggling, to be really transparent and fair.
Yeah.
But what helped me was the arts, was people who were caring, what people who were like trying to give me opportunities, no matter who they thought I was before seeing me, right? They still gave me an opportunity, gave me a choice to do certain things. How many times have that those kinds of choices and opportunities have been given to the youth to say, hey, no, you got a dope voice. We want to hear your story. So that way, academically, educationally, institutionally, when they are going back and trying to help you, they listen to you. Not formulate this plan and be like, yo, I know what you need. And they're not even from your hood. They're not even from your hood.
There's a difference, though. So you are, I've seen it, mm-hmm. A masterful dancer. I've seen it. I've seen videos. And I've seen you do it. And yep. I don't have that, well, if Soap can do it, I can do it. I don't have that.
Well,
yeah. I know what I can do.
In dancing?
I know that I can't dance. I can say, you could be a masterful teacher, and I don't have the faith that you are going to have me at a point where I'm a competent dancer. I am just big and awkward and all of that stuff. But
I can get you a two-step.
But fair enough. But I also think representation is important, right?
Yes.
Because so many times we don't see it. Right now I'm wearing a hoodie, which is from a G.I. Joe cartoon that I used to watch when I was growing up. So G.I. Joe, there's this dude, Snake Eyes. I actually like Cobra more now, right? Because I think G.I. Joe is this fascist kind of... Anyway, so this dude, Snake Eyes, he's a ninja, and he had this mask on all the time. There was a recent movie called Snake Eyes, and Snake Eyes was in some of the previous G.I. Joe movies. And in some of those movies, in all of them, I think, he took his mask off. In two of them, he was a white dude. It's different now because you're seeing beneath the mask. But when I was growing up, it was all white people. All the cartoons that I watched, mm-hmm. all the movies that I watched, it was all white people, white people, white people. So to have a badass character who has this mask on, I'm pretending maybe it's a Puerto Rican under there. Maybe this dude is a Puerto Rican ninja. I ain't never seen a Puerto Rican ninja. I know El Ninja is Dominican, but maybe it's a Puerto Rican ninja.
That sounds racist. El Ninja is the racist, most racist thing I've ever
heard. El Ninja is a real person.
It's so racist.
First of all, shout out to El Ninja. His restaurant's on Broad Street, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
A little expensive, but it's amazing. I completely agree with what you said, right? Yeah. Like, we shouldn't put that kind of pressure on people and then use you as a excuse for me to put pressure on students and be like, yo, if he did it, you can do it too. But I also think your existence and your story can serve as inspiration for people.
So
I
want to
also
different.
Point out
yep.
that one of the people in this room, I'm going to keep them anonymous because I don't want to put them on blast like this. But one of the people in this room was like, oh, snap, an Asian. I feel lonely being the only Asian person here. So again, I'm going to keep them completely anonymous. You'll never guess who it is. But she was actually excited to have
what?
That she was actually excited to have that representation on here. I think representation is important. So,
yes.
So I agree with you. And I also think, man, when I saw Miles Morales in Spider-Man,
right,
Spider-Verse,
right.
Puerto Rican Spider-Man? What the hell? Yo, I cried. I cried. I legit cried.
I thought Miles was Dominican.
He's mixed.
Miles has a Puerto Rican mom, a black dad.
Oh.
His dad's a cop, but I
forget.
Oh,
is it that?
I thought there was one that he was Dominican. I
thought he was Dominican and Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
He's Puerto Rican and black.
I'm watching one in Santiago. But yes, I do agree with you. So inspiration and motivation is completely different.
I think your wife told you that he was Dominican, man. I think your wife tried to claim. Tell your wife she can't claim Spider-Man, man.
Ex.
Okay. Your ex-wife
yep.
can't claim Spider-Man.
That was a long time ago.
I feel like that's why they made Spider-Man. So like people could think whoever's like under the mask is not like some white dude. It's like
that's what
whoever
Stan
you
Lee
think
said.
It is. Yeah.
And then he took off the mask. Oh, it's a white dude. Now what?
But Stan Lee made X-Men to deal with the civil rights plight that black America was facing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So even though he couldn't, for reasons that I don't want to get into on the podcast, even though he couldn't make a number, even though he couldn't make a number of them black, they were dealing with black issues, and that was his way of... I don't want to take away from you.
No,
Riri, what's your question?
Riri.
What's your pet peeve?
It just rolls off her shoulders.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm like, because I don't know how to do that. I can't, it doesn't roll off my shoulders that easily. Why are you not frustrated at anything? They're like nonchalant. And more so, maybe it's because I'm jealous because I can't do that or know how to do that yet.
Yo.
And I will take that to heart and be like, nothing bothers you at all?
It's just food. It's not a big deal.
Well, yeah, that's one specific thing.
Why not taunt the man?
No. I'm saying that's probably what she was thinking.
He just said that's his pet peeve. Yeah. And then you did it.
Yeah. That's what she was thinking. She was like, it's just food.
No, she was. But for me, it wasn't just food. It was a clear lack of communication and comprehension on our end. Because that wasn't just the only time. But with multiple people where I need clear communication and comprehension. And it's more so for me, so I don't react the way I react. And I still react that way. Sometimes I hold it in, but internally, boiling up.
He just pointed at the button and says, this is the button. Don't press this button. Your baby Groot ass.
That's what she said. I feel like that's probably what she was thinking.
Riri, what's your pet peeve?
I think you're right.
Making a promise and not keeping it.
There you go.
It's like every black person's thing.
Exactly, my mom.
What?
Yes. Oh my god, my mom makes so many promises.
I can't tell you.
I got a check last week. I was like, Mom, can you take me to go cash the check in? And she was like, yeah, I got you. So Friday came around. It was Friday night. She was like, I'll take you Saturday morning. You know what she did Saturday morning? Went downstairs to my aunt's house and stayed there and forgot. Came back up, and then I was like, yo, Mom, you were gonna take me to cash this check. What happened? She said, I promise you, I have you on Sunday. Guess what she did? Fell asleep. She forgot she was sleeping the entire time.
If it was your sister's check?
If my sister would do it herself. Like, she... See, because the place I need to go is, like, down that... Like, it's far.
You're definitely sleeping over before we go to Japan. I'm not counting on anybody to take you to the airport. That's not
happening. Exactly.
I want to go to Japan. Take me with you.
We're going to take Soak. We're
going to get you to go, too.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Can Adam out and then bring...
Yo, yeah. That's a good idea.
No offense, Adam.
Playing.
No
you
offense.
You might be. I'm playing. I already hurt you one time with that. No, man, dude's getting loud in the program. I'm like, oh, man, you got to understand their culture, man. Can I even take you? He got real quiet after that. I was like, I broke him. I'm so ashamed. But that's what I do. I know I'm a big dude. So the one word that I remember in Japanese is sumimasen, right? Like, excuse me, because I know that I'm too big and obnoxious and just ruin everything. And I don't want to ruin Adam.
Nah, he needs
that's
to shut up.
Such a sad smile. Chloe, what's your question?
Before the podcast started, I mentioned that I liked your tattoos.
Yes.
I was wondering if you had a favorite tattoo on yourself.
So if I had to pick, it's this one right here. It is the Dominican middle part of the scroll in the flag. And then in Cambodia, the Cambodian flag, there's the middle part, which is the Angkor Wat temple. And I put the two together and I put her initials in it. Because she was, 2003 was her birth, March 2003. So for that, I dedicated that as my only child, but that would be my favorite. But every single tattoo I have is in one way, shape, or form a part of me. And the majority of the tattoos, well, most of them, half, I drew myself and I gave it to my artist, and then he'll just tattoo it on me. Now I'll just give him my ideas, put it together.
Are you nice with a pencil?
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Are you going to have tattoos?
I want to have tattoos, but my parents said they would skin me alive.
They will take the skin of the tattoo right off.
Flog you. So I'm different a little bit as a parent, and I'm still learning how to be a parent. And with the struggles with my daughter, I'm learning I need to give... She's 19, 20. Shit, 20. Turned 20 last Friday. Saturday.
Saturday. How do you have a 20-year-old? You look 20. How do you have a 20-year-old?
I'm going to go with that. I'm still learning to be a parent, to be honest. I make a lot of mistakes because, for one, I was always on tour. But secondly, I didn't know how to be a parent because I didn't have a chance to let me be a kid.
What year did you graduate classical? I've been going under the presumption that...
99.
Okay. You were there during my generation. Literally, as I graduated...
I was coming in?
It was when you went in. Okay. Because a lot of people don't have the same experience that we had. Because... Classical picks people and they cherry pick so that they want to call their school the most diverse, but it's real easy to call yourself diverse if you get like just the right DNA black person, the most digestible of this person and all this other stuff. So even though there was some diversity, it really was. It was very much white culture.
For me it was, yeah.
Yeah, it was white culture when I was there and I could not relate because I spent a lot of time on Messer Street and I spent a lot of time on the south side of Providence. And it was that was not the world at classical high school. So I really struggled. And also, there was zero black teachers when I was there. You might have had Miss Zawadi Hawkins, a friend of mine. But she went there after, and she's black and amazing, but all white teachers when I was there, and that was tough for me too.
Mm, absolutely.
I did hang out at the theater and all this other stuff. I knew all the spots to hide.
Sorry. No, please go ahead. I had a question for you. Can I ask your age? Can I ask your age?
My age? I turned 16 in a few months.
16? And you want to get a tattoo?
Yeah.
And obviously they're like, have not. So when I did it, again, I'm not telling you to be rebellious. When I turned of age, I did it anyway. But then again, I was like 20 by that time. And there was two little Chinese lettering, because my original biological grandfather was Chinese, which explains my fair skin, right? Cambodians are more dark skin. The thing was, once I started, the dance was what, and the arts was what allowed me to express myself, quote unquote, freely within my limitations, but also to really explore what I can and can't get away with. These tattoos mean everything to me, and every single one means something in one way, shape, or form. The one on my chest was for my depression, and I saw it, and I heard the term in a movie called Training Day, which is one of the movies I love. But I think for you in your form of expression, if tattoo is one of those things, again, not telling you to be rebellious, but once you get of age, I would bring up that conversation again to your parents. And from your story, they're probably going to be like, hell nah, still. And now you decide whether or not it's worth it to go rebellious anyway or listen to them. I feel like I'm telling y'all to like defy your parents and so forth.
When you were talking about permission slips earlier,
yeah,
you know how many times I've handed a permission slip to a student? That I said, you need this if you want to go to Boston with me to this anime thing or whatever. And they were like, all right, got you. They left the room, came back with their permission slip signed. And I'm like, bro, is your mom in the hallway?
It's funny you say that. Because for this field trip I went on, I forged my mom's signature. Because my mom, it's not a bad, I got my mom's permission to do it. She's like, all right, you can go on this trip, but I'm going to forget to sign it. So you just sign it. And I'm like, okay,
I've seen it. I've seen it a million times. But Dr. Munoz sent in a question.
That's why I said what up.
He said things get deep with Soak, and he says I don't want everything to get too serious too late, because we did. We explored. Yeah. I hope this experience hasn't been too negative for you.
No, this was dope.
But he wants to know what the toughest dance practice was. What was the toughest dance move that you had to master along the way?
So I didn't master it.
He said that you would say that too. He said that you would say that you're still striving to be a master.
Nah, I don't want to go that route. It's ballet.
Okay.
Ballet. It's not something I want to do, but it was part of the learning as a dancer and working with other people who have different dance forms, different dance languages. So I was hip hop based,
yep.
Breaking based, popping, locking, all those things. When it came to, for one, the whole stigma of masculinity and femininity in ballet and all of those things, I'm like, I don't want to look vulnerable and so forth. So that was hard for me. The other thing was, it was hard, period, because it was a different form. You're straight, and then when modern dance came in, I'm like, cool, I can like bend my body a little bit more so, but it's not a dance move, it's more of the ballet itself.
Yeah.
Something I will never do. Big ups to ballet, but that's, I don't want to. Not for me. But if it's in my own realm, right now, I think I'm trying to channel different pathways for my body to maneuver dance moves.
You and I were in the same video together because we have similar thoughts on social justice, independent of each other, but similar. You and I spent a lot of time in the same hoods, in the same generation. You and I went to classical and then found our own path after that. So there's a lot of similarities. Another one is people can find our Steambox TED Talk at, if you go to YouTube and you do passion plus ownership equals learning. That was my TED Talk, because what we're doing here is I want to do this stuff based on your passions, right? So, and if you can own it, like it's your own podcast that you have in your arcade cabinet and the stuff that was sent to Japan and all that stuff, So that was my belief. That's our TED Talk. But you got a TED Talk too, bro. Where can the world find your TED Talk? What's it called?
Sokeel Ross, TED Talk 2016, Providence.
And Sokeel Ross, 1S.
1S, 1S, yep. And if you go to my Instagram, my Facebook, my LinkedIn, they all have links too. The TED Talk was interesting because they hit me up.
Yep.
Because usually you just have to apply. To apply to do the TED Talk or whatever, but and sometimes you get nominations. So that happened, and I was coming back from New York that same morning from a tour to do the TED Talk, which was dope. But I switched the TED Talk, and instead of having a talk, it was a performance.
Okay.
And it was performance on, it's a smaller version of my story called From Refugee Camp to Project or Cambodian Lullaby. And I'm basically performing with my daughter and doing monologues about my story and trauma.
Okay.
And how the arts helped me out.
Everybody, check that out. So, Keo Ross, is there anything else?
To the listeners and to y'all here, is the stage is yours. Wherever you go, you perform your best at however best you can do it. And your story is yours that you tell, nobody else.
There it is. So, Keo Ross, you've been seen. This has been another Steambox podcast, Steambox Versus. My steampunks from Steam Central Punks. Falls, my warriors. Please say peace out to the world.
Peace out!